Hello, I'm Daniel Freeman, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast.
And I'm Kevin Hatchard. Here's what's coming up on this week's edition.
The Premier League title race is back on after Wigan's shock win over Manchester United allowed Manchester City to close the gap back to 5 points.
And that victory for Wigan made it 3 wins in 4. We'll preview the big games at the bottom in the fight for survival.
It's the FA Cup semi-finals, and there are 2 mouth-watering local derbies at Wembley to look forward to.
And Charlie's here to look ahead to the Grand National at Aintree.
Well, Kev, it was some shock to see Manchester United lose at Wigan in midweek, but what it has done has caused all sorts of things at the top of the league and at the bottom. The gap now 5 points to Manchester City after they beat West Brom. And for Wigan, their fight for survival, no harm whatsoever. They were unlucky against Chelsea, and they did get the luck in the end they needed against Manchester United.
Yeah, very much so. And it was interesting listening to Sir Alex Ferguson after the game. He said that he felt Wigan are a hugely underrated team. They play some of the best football in the Premier League. And it is true, they do play excellent passing football, but they are naive defensively at times, and that's what tends to cost them over the course of the season. But they've given themselves a great chance of surviving. In terms of the title race, Manchester City beating West Brom 4-0. They've closed the gap to 5 points. But Roberto Mancini afterwards said the title race is finished. 5 points is too big a gap. But he knows that if City can beat United at the Etihad later in the season, that gap will be down to 2 points. And then that really will make it very tight at the end. But I think what Mancini's doing is what Pep Guardiola's been doing with the La Liga title race in Spain. He's been saying for weeks and weeks, it's finished, it's over, we can't possibly win the league. And that has in turn put pressure on Real Madrid, and the gap has closed.
The derby aside, on the end of April, the games, the run-in for both teams is pretty similar. And we start this week, City go to Norwich, a team that United won 2-1 at earlier in the season, thanks to a very late Ryan Giggs goal, and that could prove to be the difference at the end of the season. While United host Aston Villa, a team who I don't think are safe from relegation just yet.
No, I think Villa have a bit of work to do. I think they've still got a few points to pick up. Maybe 3 would be enough. 3 or 4 should do it. They've got a lot of kids playing at the moment, a lot of academy players who have actually acquitted themselves pretty well. But it's a big ask to get something at Old Trafford for them. Manchester City, this is one of their biggest tests of the season. Going to Norwich, the Canaries have just won at White Hart Lane and deserve to win at White Hart Lane as well. And if you look at some of the away games that City have lost, they've lost at places like Sunderland, Everton, Swansea. So they really do need to win, and they need to show the class that's required to win the Premier League title.
Well, Kev, we just mentioned Aston Villa as one of the teams still in need of a few points to assure their safety in the Premier League next season. I still think they've got some work to do, especially when you consider that one of their games in hand is against Bolton, which is effectively a 6-pointer. Elsewhere, though, Sunderland against Wolves. So Wolves are the team looking for the points there. They're more or less gone. Blackburn go to Swansea. QPR are away at West Brom. And Wigan travel to Arsenal on Monday night.
Well, Wigan will obviously go into that Arsenal game with plenty of confidence, but I do think that that game is set up for Arsenal to win and win well, because the way Arsenal play, they move the ball at speed, and Wigan defensively don't like that. They struggle badly against teams who can do that, and they also they like to try and dominate possession against teams, and Arsenal obviously won't let them do that. So I can't quite see Wigan getting anything out of that one. Queen's Park Rangers going to West Brom. West Brom, I think, switched off a while ago. They've picked up the odd decent result here and there, but I think they know they're safe more or less. So that's a great opportunity for QPR to get something out of that. Blackburn, I thought, were naive against Liverpool in midweek, losing 3-2 at home to a team that were down to 10 men after 26 minutes. And I don't think they were brave enough at 2-2. I don't think they went for it with quite the ferocity they should have done. And I don't expect them to get anything at Swansea, who, of course, are so strong at home. And Wolves, as you say, they're pretty much down, I think, bereft of confidence. The defence is the worst in the Premier League, without doubt, and it just cripples them every game. So I think Sunderland will pick up the 3 there.
You're pretty certain that Aston Villa will stay. You've seen enough from the kids in the last 2 home games to suggest that they should be OK. So basically, we're going to pick pick two teams from four, really, do you think?
Yeah, I think Wolves are down. I think Blackburn, I think, even though they've got quality players such as Hoylett and Yakubu in attack, and they've got some decent defenders as well, like Scott Down and a good goalkeeper in Robinson, I just think as a team they're not performing as well as they should be. And I think the fear is there in their game. That's what I saw against Liverpool in midweek. There was a real nervousness about their play. And as I say, they didn't go for the opportunity when they had it. So I think they're in deep trouble. Wigan have got experience of getting out of trouble. And they've been playing well probably for about a month, 6 weeks now. So they've got a great opportunity. And, you know, QPR still have some tough games. So I think it's going to be so, so tight. But I still think it could be Wolves, Blackburn, and I think Bolton are going to get dragged into it. I think Bolton will be the ones to join those other two.
QPR, for me, showed enough against Swansea to suggest that in those sort of games, when they're going to be playing teams that necessarily don't have too much to play for, that they can turn up and be too good for them and prove that they probably should have been way up higher in the table a lot earlier in the season. West Brom are in a similar sort of picture there to Swansea, so you know that they'll be targeting this as a game that they'll be looking to win. And Bolton don't have a game this weekend. They're going to have two games in hand on a lot of teams at the bottom there.
Yeah, and I think the one thing to bear in mind as well, you said about QPR, the one thing QPR have that Bolton don't have is firepower. They've got the strikers to get the goals they need. Whereas I look at Bolton, and I'm not sure they do. They don't have a kind of Bobby Zamora or a Cisse. They don't have that explosiveness up front. David Ngog is not going to get you the goals to stay in the Premier League. And while they're a good, hard-working unit, I wonder if they've got enough quality in attack to survive.
Well, let's hear from Dale Tempest from skybet.com again to tell us the latest odds on relegation from the Premier League.
No, it looks very open. Suddenly, QPR are in great form. Wigan, an amazing run of form against tough opposition. Wigan even money. Blackburn now 1-2 for relegation. Bolton 11-10. Owen Coyle's boys really need to turn things round. And one side that won't have liked to see those midweek results were Aston Villa. They've got two decent draws in the last two games, but suddenly they're into 10-1 for relegation.
It's also FA Cup semi-final this weekend, Kev, and Liverpool up against Everton, a Merseyside derby at Wembley, and also Chelsea against Spurs, that game on Sunday, a North London derby at the old Wembley Stadium. So a massive weekend there. I don't think the FA could have wished for two better, bigger fixtures than those two for semi-finals.
Yeah, absolutely. The Liverpool-Everton one is interesting because it's probably one of the few Merseyside derbies in which Everton possibly go in as slight favourites. They've been playing very, very well for some time now. Liverpool will point to the fact that they've beaten them home and away in the league this season. They'll also take great heart from the fact that a weakened team managed to win at Blackburn and play most of the game with 10 men. Obviously, there'll be huge pressure on the Liverpool goalkeeper, Brad Jones, who is the third choice. He looked very nervous against Blackburn, so he's got some work to do mentally ahead of the game. It'll be very, very tight, I suspect. I think it'll be ugly. I don't think it'll be great to watch. And I think, you know, a one-goal margin either way will probably decide it.
It's intriguing in the way that if you look at, you know, the possible final permutations, Everton have beaten both Chelsea and Spurs already this season. Spurs have beaten both Liverpool and Everton already this season. Chelsea are the ones for me that I still think that there's so much else going on in their season where an FA Cup semi-final might just be one. They're going into an FA Cup final possibly, maybe just a bit too much for them.
The only thing I'd say is that I think Chelsea have a little bit more experience of big occasions than that Spurs team do. And I think I've been really impressed with the way Di Matteo has transformed the way Chelsea play. He's upped the tempo of the way they play. They move the ball much more quickly now. There's a greater work ethic. They work better as a unit. I know they're still not playing amazingly well in the Premier League. They didn't deserve to beat Wigan, and they were rightly held to a draw by Fulham. But I just think there's so much quality in that Chelsea lineup, and there's so much experience that might carry the day. Spurs have some great players, but they don't have massive experience of cup semi-finals, big events like this. And so I just think Chelsea might edge it.
And one final thought, something that didn't enter my mind initially, and I feel pretty bad about it now, is the fact that Liverpool-Everton, of course, taking place on the Saturday because Sunday marks the anniversary of Hillsborough. Now, I totally understand, therefore, why the Liverpool game is being played on the Saturday, and I understand for policing reasons why it isn't an evening kickoff, because, what, 50, 60,000 Scousers coming down to London for the day is probably not the best mixture. But why the hell is Chelsea Spurs on at 6 o'clock on a Sunday evening?
I don't understand it. I do understand why they're both at Wembley, because Wembley is in dire need of money and they need to get as many events on as possible. But no, I can't fathom, apart from television reasons and obviously the TV company hoping that they'll get a bigger audience at 6 o'clock. I can't fathom it at all. I think it should be earlier. I think it's a real kick in the teeth for Chelsea when they're building towards a Champions League semi-final game against Barcelona. And when you bear in mind that the Spanish League have consented to moving El Clásico, the game between Barcelona and Real Madrid, to help their preparations, the fact that we've actually done the opposite and made Chelsea's game later and put it at 6 o'clock is a nonsense. So, I think it's ridiculous that Liverpool and Everton have both got to travel down to Wembley when Old Trafford is just down the road. I also think it's ridiculous that they've put Chelsea Spurs on at 6 o'clock. And unfortunately, it is the way of the world now that both of those decisions are motivated by money.
OK, Kev, well, thanks for your time this week. You'll be back next week. Now let's hear from Dale and his thoughts from skybet.com on the outrights for the FA Cup.
Well, Tottenham are the favourites, just very slightly, not much between the top sides, 9-4 Tottenham, 12-5 Chelsea, and then the other two teams from the semi, Liverpool at threes and Everton at 100-30. The Merseyside clubs, well, Everton are in great form, but they'd really have to go against all tradition and all recent games against Liverpool to get a victory there. Tottenham-Chelsea, well, I think you really can't separate those two teams. They've drawn both their games this season. That one really could come down to a penalty shootout. If I had to have a bet now, I'd probably take Everton at the big price of 100-30.
And last but certainly not least this week, we look ahead to the Grand National at Aintree, where around £200 million is expected to be bet on the race this year. Here's Charlie Owens looking ahead to all of the action.
Well, I'm delighted to welcome Jenny Prest from WilliamHill.com, and she's going to help us have a look at this year's Grand National. It really is a classy affair, 40 runners, 15 from Ireland, and very unusually, we've got a Gold Cup winner heading the weights. Synchronised is the horse we're talking about, trained by John Joe O'Neill. Before we talk about the horse, let's have a quick listen to what John Joe O'Neill has to say about his horse.
Normally, he wouldn't run a Gold Cup half life, but this race is more suitable to him on his past form than the Gold Cup was. And if he had finished third, fourth, fifth in the Gold Cup, we'd be all saying it was the right race for him, you know. Listen, because he's won the Gold Cup, we all want to put him in his last case and kiss him and love him forever, you know. But he's a racehorse and he's in good form, and this is the race that suits him, and to be ashamed to not give him the opportunity to try and win it, wouldn't it? He's an ideal horse for the race, you know. He does jump well, and you know, he's quite clever. He's got his own system of doing it, hasn't he, you know? And he stays well, so he is the best horse in the race, isn't he?
Well, yeah, the best horse in the race. Well, is he the right horse for the race? What do you think, Jenny?
Well, he certainly looks like it. You're right, it's a really classy Grand National this year to have the Gold Cup winner. He's certainly got that absolute pedigree. He's Midlands Grand National winner, he's a Welsh Grand National winner, so he's obviously suited by those kind of races. It's just that burden of that top weight on him at 11 stone 10. It's not been a horse that's won from top rate since Red Rum, and so it does look like a really tough task.
He doesn't have the experience of the fences, and that's an unknown. Now, one horse that does have experience of the fences is West End Rocker. Now, he did fall in the National last year, but he then went back to face the Aintree fences in the Beecher Chase in December, and he hacked up by 22 lengths. Now, phenomenal performance, trained by Alan King, and, well, we haven't seen him out since, but here's why.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to have given him another run. I mean, we didn't run him again after the Beecher till the weights come out, because I wanted to protect his mark, and the plan was to run him in the Grimthorpe at Doncaster, and unfortunately that came up good to firm, and I couldn't risk him. But he's done plenty of work, and we took him away last week and worked him at Manton. You know, he's done plenty, and he doesn't, you know, he's a horse that's probably at his best when he's fresh.
How much does it help a horse having faced these fences successfully in the past?
Yeah, I actually think that it's quite key. It's such a unique race, and a horse won't see fences like they do at Aintree or on any other race course in the country. So certainly there's horses that will go to the race and not like it, and there's horses that will go to the race and absolutely relish the challenge of the fences. And you can quite often tell fairly early on in the race if your horse is one that loves it or hates it. So definitely to have had that experience around there already, even if, as West End Rocker was obviously, he was unlucky last year, he was brought down at the Beaches the first time, but crucially he's had that experience and he looked like he enjoyed it, and that can make a really big difference to a horse.
One of the trainers who was in form yesterday with Big Bucks obviously, and the other was Edgardo Sol later in the day. Well, this is one particular race Paul Nicholls had never won, but he might have a chance with Neptune Colognes, and it's a horse he thinks has snuck under the radar.
He's sort of slipped under the radar a little bit. There's no pressure with him, but he's, you know, he's a classy horse, run well twice this year. He run well in Gold Cups and won two or three grade ones. Not many horses in the race can match that, and he's run really well this year, you know. He doesn't want it too soft these days, so, you know, good to soft ground would be perfect for him. Could run really tidy.
Now, Jenny, he's a horse that I do think has snuck under the radar. What sort of price range are we looking at for this one?
25-33 to 1 shot, so certainly plenty of value for your money. Again, he's relatively high in the weights. He's carrying 11 stone 6, but he's bound to be popular. He's got that touch of class. He's run very well in the top races, including the Gold Cup, which he was placed in. He's a grey as well. Everybody loves a grey for the National, don't they? I think there'll be a few people putting some money on him because of that.
I think you're right. As I said, Paul Nicholls has never won the race before, but one guy who has is Ted Walsh. Very interesting this year, his runner Seabass will be partnered by his daughter Katie. Let's hear what Ted's got to say about Seabass. We'll start off with why he actually sent him to the National in the first place.
I suppose when he won the Leopardstown Chase, he got a good old hike in the handicap. There wasn't a lot from it at home. He wasn't going to get into any of the handicaps at Cheltenham. And if he was, he was going to have top weight. He ended up with top weight in the Irish National. So with less than 11 stone in his back, and the National being the National, the guys that owned him were anxious to come here. So was I. It's a one-off occasion. He might never again, any of them might never again have an opportunity to stand in the parade ring or be involved in the greatest race in the world. Ruby riding in it, Katie riding in it, and Nina riding in it. So what more could anyone ask for, to be that much involved in the Grand National? Is terrific.
Oh yes, a family affair for the Walshes there. But what do you make of Seabass's chance? Do you think he'll actually stay this trip?
Well, he's certainly in good form at the moment with a whole load of wins in his recent runs. Whether they stay or not is difficult. I mean, he certainly won over 3 miles and won that comfortably. And the trainers are the experts. They're the ones that probably have a better idea than any of us about whether they can do it. And so I'm sure as they've put the horse in that they think that he's got a brilliant chance. It's a fascinating story, isn't it? The whole Walsh and Carberry connections. And there's actually 4 members of the family, really. I think Paul Carberry's gone a little bit under the radar, but obviously Katie's going to be riding Seabass. Ruby's riding on his own. Nina Carberry, who is now their sister-in-law, because she's married to Ruby and Katie's brother Ted, she's going to be on Organised Confusion. And then her brother Paul is riding Chicago Grace. They're all brilliant jockeys, and how wonderful for the family to basically have 4 horses running for them in the National.
I wonder if there's a block price available, whether the Walsh Mafia can pull off the big one.
Yeah, I think once we know the final field and we've got all the final prices, there'll definitely be those. I mean, there's certainly William Hill quoting 11 to 1 for a female jockey to win the race, so that's either Katie or Nina, and that would be such a historic event. They're such brilliant jockeys, so both of them, they've won Cheltenham Festival races and they've got so much experience. They're just as good as the boys, and it's just about time, I think, that one of the girls did actually get the big prize, and it would be such a wonderful story, which the Grand National always does produce.
Oh, girl power it is then. Now, you did mention that Ruby Walsh will be riding on his own. Well, on his own is trained by Willie Mullins, who won the race a while back with Hedge Hunter. And he's also got 3 runners in tomorrow's encounter, including on his own. Let's hear what Willie has to say about his 3 runners.
Yes, on his own, he's a huge, big, long-striding horse, and I think he liked the straying ground. And he'd been working well alongside Prince of Ocean all the time. You know, so a lot of people probably had Prince of Ocean on the radar, but this fellow was, on his homework, has been very good. Then we have Midnight Club and Chris Coverfontaine. Midnight Club made a bad mistake at the third fence here last year, and it just upset him for the rest of the race and still finished sixth. If he gets into a good rhythm early on, I don't think the trip will be any problem to him. However, he just hasn't really returned to form this year yet. I'm hoping that when he breathes some of this entry air, that it'll revitalise him. Chris Coverfontaine ran a terrific race in the Irish Grand National last year. We haven't run him over fences since, but he's done plenty of schooling. He stays well, I think, and if he adapts to the entry fences, he won't be out of it either.
Yeah, Willie, and he knows his stuff. What do you make of his trio?
Certainly on his own, with Ruby Walsh on board, is certainly going to be popular with the big racing fans, because Ruby's such a brilliant jockey. And he looks like he's got a fair chance as well. He's running some of the longer distance races. He's run well over 3 miles, and he's had a good prep race in the Fiestas since then, which he won going away, which is a fair effort for a 3 mile race on soft to heavy ground. So he certainly looks like he should stay. Of the others, Chris Coverfontaine's one that I've got half an eye for, actually. It's going to be a reasonable price, I think probably around the 50-1 shot. So he'll certainly be fresh and ready. Again, as Willie Mullins said, it is just a case of whether he does take to the fences.
Now, one of the anti-post favourites for the National was a horse called Junior, trained by David Pipe. The fascinating horse is not only has he won at the Cheltenham Festival when he won the King Muir, but he's also won the Ascot Stakes at Royal Ascot. So the horse got a bit of class. Tom Scudamore is going to be in the plate. Let's hear what Tom has to say about this horse.
This has been his target for a year now, so he's looking well, feeling well. Had a sit in him during the week and was very, very happy with him. Dave is very, very happy with him, and just needs that little element that nobody's promised, is that bit of slice of luck. Again, a competitive race, a high-quality renewal, and Junior's a Royal Ascot winner and a Cheltenham Festival winner, so we won't be short of class.
He certainly won't be short of class, but has he got what it takes to win the National?
Yeah, I think Junior's a very interesting runner as well, and that would be a fascinating story, wouldn't it, if a horse went to win at Cheltenham, win the Grand National and win at Royal Ascot. I mean, that's absolutely going to be a first. He's not the biggest horse, but I don't think you need to be for a Grand National. Quite often being a bit lighter on your feet and a bit more nimble helps you out in such a big field. If he takes the fences, he looks like he's going to have a real fighting chance, I think.
Excellent. Well, we're going to go down for our selections. Now, I'm going to throw out a horse that we haven't heard the trainer talk about, but I'm going to throw out Killy Glenn, who was travelling really well in the race last year. When he tipped up four from home, he was in third place at the time. And I think running off 10 stone four, £10 less than what he carried last year, that this is a horse that's got a fair chance. That's my selection, Killy Glenn. What about you, Jenny?
Yeah, I would agree about Killy Glenn, and a lot of people have. His odds have tumbled with William Hill in the last recent week or so. He's probably going to be around a 16-1 shot, I would imagine. One horse that I quite like the look of is Sunny Hill Boy. He's carrying just £1 more at 10 stone 5. And he, again, has always struck me as a Grand National type of horse. He came third in the Irish National in April last year. So I think he's got a really good chance, and he's going to be about a 20-25-1 shot. So a good run for a decent price, I think, is due for Sunny Hill Boy.
Well, that seems quite a nice each-way price for Sunny Hill Boy. And it just remains to thank Jenny Prest for her time in concocting this preview. And good luck to everyone who has a punt on the National. Don't forget, it's run on Saturday at 4:15.
Well, thanks for that, Charlie. Hopefully you're now in the know as to which horses to bet on in this year's Grand National. This week, we've looked ahead to the Premier League title race, the intriguing battle between Manchester City and Manchester United atop. We've had our thoughts on who's going to get relegated from the Premier League, and of course, looked ahead to the FA Cup semi-finals at Wembley. Enjoy your sporting weekend.